GP Portland. It's another exciting episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Holy cow, what's Magic the Amateuring?
Magic the Amateuring is a podcast for Magic learners, players returning to the game, and anybody who likes to have a chuckle from time to time. You know, not too much of a chuckle. We don't want you to die from not being able to breathe because you're laughing so hard, but maybe we want you to get sick.
Yeah, if we could make everyone ill once.
Yes.
That seems like a good goal to accomplish.
Hi. A
good goal to set and accomplish.
My name is Maria. I am a magic amateur. I learned about a year and a half ago.
Hey, my name's Megan. I'm another one of your hosts, and I also learned to play magic about a year and a half ago.
And we're joined this week with our good friend from the show, Judge Rob McKenzie, a level 3 judge. Welcome, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for having me, and it has been a fantastic weekend, hasn't it?
It sure has, Rob.
It sure has, guys. I feel right now like we should be sitting at a news desk.
It's been a fantastic weekend, Veronica. Mm-hmm.
Let's throw it over to weather.
78 and sunny all day. That's what it all was. Day. Did you want to know what it's going to be?
Nope, I would like to know what the weather was, please.
Okay, it was 78 and sunny all day.
I had to ask you what the weather was because I've been holed up inside of a GP
you guys.
Convention hall for the past day.
Welcome to every weekend for me.
Life of a judge.
The life of a traveling road judge.
Judge Rob, you're never going to get skin cancer, so congratulations.
Well.
That's a pretty big statement, Megan. You don't know how much time Judge Rod spends in a tanning bed.
That's true. He's exceptionally tan for a man who spends all of his weekends indoors.
It's true. I'm pretty orange. That may be the carrots. Maybe the carrots, but I'm pretty orange.
You guys, we are recording in the convention center here in Portland, sunny Portland, Oregon. And today on the show, we're going to talk all about GP Portland, which was team sealed.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What's that?
Hold on. You just keep your pants on,
right.
Megan. Always taking off her pants.
Especially in the middle of the convention center.
Talk about Team Sealed. What does that mean? This GP was huge. It was 4 days. Going to talk about that and some of the side events. We've got some funny stories from the GP as well. Card of the week for you. And Rob's doing something really silly with Standard. He's going to tell us all about that coming up as well.
Yeah. I'm going to put back on my pants so that I don't get arrested.
All right, so Team Sealed.
Oh, man. What on earth is Team Sealed, you guys?
I think Judge Rob can tell us pretty good because he's a smart guy.
So Team Sealed is my favorite tournament, second favorite tournament format. It's
what's your first?
Team Constructed, which isn't actually really played anymore.
That's not a thing.
It was played for about a year at high level play. It was actually super fun. You had to build three decks, and the four of limit applied across all three decks for your team.
What?
Holy crap.
And
so you couldn't have like three players all playing mono black.
Right, exactly. And so then there was also the problem of the rock, paper, scissors figuring out where to sit seats. And like... sometimes, like at the time that it was a standard format, Umezawa's Jitte was a thing.
Yeah.
And like, it was obligatory you had a Jitte deck. You don't split your Jittes up because that makes two decks that are bad. But then you had to play this. Where is their Jitte going to be? How do we beat a Jitte? You know, only one of us needs to beat a Jitte at a time, though.
Oh my
god!
Wow, gosh.
This sounds messed.
It was pretty fun, but Team Sealed is reasonably similar. You get a team of people, like the three of us were a team this weekend, and you get handed 12 boosters, and you build a total of 340 card decks out of those boosters, just like a normal sealed deck.
Oh, man. And you guys, what a mess it can be.
Yes.
It's a fun mess. It's like jumping in a pile of mashed potatoes.
Right, fun mess.
Fun mess.
It's like when a celebrity crashes their car because they're drunk, but they're not too hurt. A fun mess.
Yeah, it's like every time that I go to dye my hair.
Fun mess.
Fun mess.
It's like when I take a shower in spaghetti. A fun mess.
Fun mess.
Shower in spaghetti?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The pasta sauce does wonders for your pores.
I just want you to think about how spaghetti is the perfect size to fit through one of those
shower heads. It's like Play-Doh.
Oh.
You couldn't have a fettuccine shower because fettuccine noodles will not fit through.
Angel hair, however, divine.
Perfect.
Divine.
Amazing. Literally.
You wouldn't think that 12 packs would be enough to build three decks from. At least I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No.
So the big deal that I find in Team Sealed versus Normal Sealed, so first of all, Normal Sealed is way easier. I played two sealed decks this weekend, and I built both decks in about 20 minutes between the two. Like, there were almost no decisions in either of my pools. And I was like, okay, I'm done. And the Team Sealed, you get given an hour, and it's not enough time.
No,
it is not.
It's like all decisions. Yeah. I remember being like, okay, there's 20 minutes left. Great, I'm doing great. And then all of a sudden there were 5 minutes left and I was having to like scribble onto my deck list, just being like, one of this, two of this, who knows?
Yeah, it was extremely difficult. I mean, you're not only making decisions for yourself, but you're trying to help your team make decisions. You're trying to think, oh, I don't want all the good cards, let's spread them around. What are the good synergies? Oh, it was just a decision party.
And because I feel like when you're playing regular sealed, usually you can cut a color or two. You're just like, there are just not enough playable cards in this color. It's not an option.
Yep.
Whereas in this, you have to go through literally every combination of all of these cards.
But sometimes there's not even enough time to do that.
There's never enough time.
Wow. Yeah.
It's like the never-ending story of deck building.
Even if you just look at one and two color decks, which is about all that you can get in the core set, you still have 15 decks to look at. Like,
sick.
If you just look at just raw, throwing the colors together, putting all their best cards together, and that's not even the best way to build decks.
Oh, jeez.
So in Team Sealed, once you've got your decks built, which, you know, congratulations, a fucking miracle, you did it, you play another team of three. You have certain seats that you have to sit across, so I have a seat B in the middle. Megan was A and Judge Rob was C, and we had to sit across from the respective A, B, and C members and play a game.
Oh.
We'll play a match, actually,
not
just one game.
Yeah, a match. Sorry.
Well, no, it might be different because, like, Two-Headed Giant, you only play a single game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
true.
So you play a full match.
Yep. Each player plays a full match, and then your record is actually the number of matches that you won out of the three matches that you played rather than based on games. And so realistically... people say it's lower variance. I don't know if that's true because it still has the sealed deck variance. Like, we opened no mythics? I don't think we opened any mythics at all.
Perilous Vault is a mythic.
Oh, it is a mythic? Okay, yeah. And that was pretty good. That card was pretty good.
Perilous Vault. Pretty good, you guys.
You heard it here first. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Sweepers. So, pretty good.
Yeah. And so the big deal in Team Sealed is that... it's theoretically lower variance because you only have to win two matches, but like I think our first three matches were all really really close.
They were all
where
so close.
Actually, a change of one game would have changed our entire match outcome.
Yes, and in case the listeners are wondering, we ended the day at 3-4, so we didn't have a winning record, but we kept battling even after we were out of contention. We kept fighting because it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, I do think we made some mistakes in building our decks, which we realized after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
But we did very well in a lot of the games. I thought I saw Megan play, and she was playing really solid. So was Judge Rob. And it's just sometimes you lose a really close game, and that's just what it is. Just really close.
And sometimes you all consistently lose really close
games.
That's
kind of the way it was for us.
It was. I have to say it was unique in that none of the games felt like runaway victories.
Except when I was stuck on two islands.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
But that's it.
I had a couple of those. I had one where I drew 11 out of my 16 lands.
That
and
seems
he drew one more bomb than me, and that was it. Like
that's a lot of lands.
Well, that was every game for me though. Like I saw I had to win one game by going to two cards in my library and make a final alpha attack before I died, so.
Yep, that's fair. I in fact decked myself before being able to win.
Before you wrecked yourself?
Yeah, I decked myself before I wrecked myself. Or I decked myself in order, and then which was wrecking myself.
Right.
Because I feel like one of the things that we ended up, one of the mistakes that we made was that my deck did not have enough win conditions. It was a little low on the power level, very high on ways to kill things. Perilous Vaulted, so many things. But I had like one Chasm Skulker, and it ended up being the second from the bottom card on my library. And it's just like, no, that's not enough time to win with that card.
Nope.
especially bad because in order to actually win with Chasm Skulker, you need to draw cards.
Hold up. Yes. Is this Chasm Skulker?
Chasm Skulker?
Or Chasm Skulker?
Okay, it depends on how you pronounce the word chasm or chasm.
Nobody says chasm.
But I look at that card and I want to say Chasm Skulker because Chasm Skulker is too much hard sound.
So your mouth is so lazy that you need to...
I need the comfort of a ch...
Oh, you guys. Magic makes you silly after a lot of rounds.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, we got here at 8 a.m.?
8 a.m. This GP started earlier than any we've ever played before.
I don't know what I did to them, but if you happen to talk to Channel Fireball and know why they have a personal vendetta against me.
Megan was real mad this morning getting up.
That they want to start games at matches at 8.
Talk about a sleepy goblin. Well,
I just want to make the case, the players who are still in the tournament for today, it was 9 rounds of Swiss, they're still playing and it's 9
Sick.
p.m.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I actually do.
Okay, I get it. I get it that it was a good idea, but you guys...
What?
I was so tired.
Sleepy Goblin!
I'm so tired.
So, Portland is a lovely city. Megan and I trekked around it yesterday in some nice wooded areas on a mountain.
Yeah, it was an arboretum and the International Rose Test Garden.
Yes, lovely.
Was it a little bonsai mountain inside the arboretum?
Wait, what?
Was it a bonsai mountain inside the arboretum?
Was there a bonsai? What?
Bonsai mountain. Like,
what are you talking about?
You know how trees can be bonsai'd and make them miniature?
Yeah.
Yes.
You do that with a mountain.
Oh, it was a bonsai mountain.
Yeah,
I get it.
We walked so far. We walked so many miles in not hiking shoes.
Okay.
So we were very extra tired today.
It was like the Shih Tzu version of a mountain. It wasn't small enough to be a bonsai mountain. It was like a Shih Tzu mountain.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
We also discovered the fashion of Portland. Megan made this apt discovery.
Yes, I am calling the Portland style, for the most part, it's the trendy fisherman.
Uh-huh.
But really, trendy can be replaced with X. It's like X fisherman, athletic fisherman, shirtless fisherman, hobo fisherman, fisherman chic.
Oh, nice.
So if you want to come to Portland and fit in with the locals, just make your wardrobe fit, you know, some variation on the fisherman theme, and you'll be doing all right.
Let's quickly, for the listeners, let them know our decks that we played and how you felt that they played out. Judge Rob.
So I was playing a green-red control deck that just basically blocked a lot until it could cast a bomb, and its bombs were very, very good. And so my deck ended up just seeing the same cards every game because I just wanted to draw a lot of cards. I would usually see upwards of 20 cards out of my library every game.
Sick.
And the most valuable card for me was Burning Anger. And Burning Anger it gives your creature the ability to tap to deal damage to target creature player equal to its power. And there were at least 3 games today where I put it on a 8-plus power creature. And then my opponents realized that it could tap to deal damage to them. And they were like, well, that's a pretty fast clock there that also kills my creatures. I guess we're done.
Right.
And so the super value card that comboed with it was Genesis Hydra, which Genesis Hydra is green-green X. When you cast Genesis Hydra, reveal the top X cards of your library and put a non-land permanent card of converted mana cost X or less onto the battlefield under your control. And it can get Burning Anger. And so...
That blew my mind. I did not realize Genesis Hydra my brain. I didn't realize it could grab non-creatures.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
It was a blowout. Many people had to reread Genesis Hydra a couple times when they realized that I was, you know, making my 4/4 that had been on the battlefield for a couple turns able to kill one of their guys, and I was also getting a 7/7 out of the deal. And then they were like, well, I don't have any plays against that. You 2-for-1, 2 bombs. And so it played out really, really smoothly. I had lots of good blockers, lots of good ability to make giant undergrowth scavengers, to make a hoarding dragon. And it was just very, very consistent.
Well, I played white-blue skies. And it was a little, it was a little wimpy. But it was my style. We gave it to me because I like to be aggressive, and that's kind of what I wanted to do. I think it fell apart a bit because its top end was a little lackluster. I had a Sanctified Charge, which everybody's so hot about right now. Mm-hmm. And that saved my butt a few times. But... I just said butt so many times. But. Okay. It was a little too wussy sometimes, and not quite fast enough. Not quite fast enough to be super aggro, and not quite strong enough to push through at the end when it needed to. So that was its shortcoming.
Also, someone pointed out that you had constricting sliver.
Yeah.
And we also had a sliver hive.
Shut up. Nobody needs to know that we were real dumb.
I'm just saying that it never even occurred to me that it's expensive, but that's just sick.
Yeah.
Just sick, man. Sick.
I had forgotten that Sliver Hive actually made sliver tokens. I thought it was just a way to tap for any color of mana to cast your slivers.
Oh, that's fair.
I was like, oh, that card casts our slivers. Well, we don't care because we don't have any slivers.
Yeah.
There you go.
Megs, what was your deck?
My deck was blue-black control. So my dream, essentially. I was playing 3 Typhoid Rats, 3 Research Assistants.
Nice.
You guys, I looted so much... I looted so many cards. It was amazing.
You blocked a lot.
I did a lot of blocking. I had 2 Covenant of Bloods, Flesh to Dust, and a Perilous Vault, which, you guys, I exiled so many Planeswalkers today.
I know. I saw you.
Fuck you, Planeswalkers.
Fuck you.
You were Garrick. You were Garrick.
That's right. I exiled him. Yeah. Are you a murderer? Exile. Are you a giant sphinx who asks me questions? Exiled. I would also like to note that for being a rare, a whole fucking lot of people sure played Master of Predicaments against me today.
I did. Me as well. And so many Nissas for being a mythic rare.
Right? We each played a Nissa today.
Yes.
We each played against
all 3 of us.
Yep.
All right. Confirmed.
And I would just like to brag for a second. I mastered every predicament. There was one time when I told the guy the exact name of the card he was holding. I was like, for the record, 4 or less, but it's Juggernaut.
How did you actually know?
Yeah. So he had played Juggernaut in the game before. And just something about it, I was just like, I bet, like, Juggernaut just would have wrecked me right then, too, if he had been able to put it into play for free. So he holds it up, and I was just like... I fucking know. I know that this dude has that effing Juggernaut in his hand. Because that's also the greatest card that you could cheat into play. Because if your opponent's just like, well, they can have a cheap spell. I just don't want them to get anything expensive. Juggernaut is like the best cheap spell that you could put out. And I had seen this guy play it. So I was just like, called it, bitch.
Megan, will you tell my fortune since you apparently are psychic now?
Yeah, you're going to die in the future. Sorry, buddy.
All right.
But I think you've still got a few more years in you.
Oh, good. Oh, thank God. I need to play some more Magic.
You're...
Does she have more than 4 years or less than 4 years?
I'm going to go with more than 4. More than 4 years.
Yes.
Anyways, as we mentioned before, I did feel like my deck was a little low on win conditions. I had lots of Rot Feaster Maggots, which are so great, and 2 Accursed Spirits. But I just got beat up by flyers a little bit. Got a little bit beat up by flyers today.
Yeah. I want to make the case that we misbuilt our decks a little bit.
I would agree.
My vote, after we saw them play out a little bit, was that basically we hardly played red at all. I played 4 red cards, and we had an entire red aggressive shell that we could have added to our white instead of playing the blue.
Well, you know, time's gone by. Like sands through the hourglass. These are the days of our lives.
Yeah, and I think that if we had added that red to the white deck, then I could have taken some of the blue from Maria's deck that could have shored up some holes in my deck, really.
So what lesson can we learn from this to give our listeners moving forward in general?
In general? It's don't be afraid to try all your things. Because we didn't spend a lot of time on putting together a red-white deck. We didn't spend a lot of time figuring out how many flyers that were actually needed in the blue-black control deck. And so we could have focused our time on that a little more. We could have experimented a little more when we were building to see if those decks worked a little better.
My mom sometimes laments that she also did not spend as much time experimenting as she could have.
So as many wild oats as she should have.
Sick, I don't actually know that.
More than I wanted to think about Maria's mom ever. More. I would say I definitely agree with that. And I also think that, one, I got a little bit of panic brain today.
Why?
Well, I mean, just while you're building, because like you said, time flies by so quickly. You have so much to do. And you get a little bit, at some point I was just like, there's too fucking much.
Yeah.
But the other thing I would say is that don't ever underestimate the power of sealed decks. I always forget that sealed, sealed in essence,
especially team sealed
just comes down to straight power. And I felt like my deck, for instance, really suffered from that. It had a very good plan, but it was honestly a little low on the sheer power side.
Right, and if you don't have sheer power, you need to ramp hard in the other direction.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Like, you better aggro them out before they can play jack shit.
Yep. So, extremes.
Yeah, and my deck, all it had was power cards after a point. I showed the deck to a friend of ours, and he said his big comment was, this deck can't... Like, if you get in a top deck war, most of your cards are bad. But when you top deck a good card, you kill them. And that, I felt like our decks needed a little bit more of that between them. Like, my deck had that, but we needed more of that ability to just blow them out sometimes between our three decks.
Well, we met on this GP a lot of lovely people. So I just wanted to say a shout out to everybody who is a new listener to this podcast for the first time after meeting us at this GP.
Yeah, and also all the people that stopped by and said hi. Gave us high fives.
Good luck, high five.
Because that was real awesome, dudes.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thank you. We're happy to put you into the fold.
That's not how you say that. It's bring you into the fold.
What is the difference?
Put you into the fold sounds like... Do you hear it now that I say it?
Well,
do you hear how that sounds weird?
I still want to put someone in the fold.
No, you bring them in. You can't like lift a sheep and set it down amongst other sheep.
I can lift a sheep. You don't know what I can lift.
But you have to like lead a sheep into a group of sheep.
I am taking this sheep by this sheep scruff.
Maria, I've seen more sheep in my life than you have, okay?
Oh no, you have not.
Oh, I really have, though.
What?
I really have.
How?
Look, I was in Ireland for 2 months, okay? More sheep than people there. So before we get into more stuff about the GP, about cards and important things like that.
Sure.
I just want to tell everyone the most important thing that happened.
Oh God.
Was that Maria was standing on a chair. I don't know why. Maria, why are you standing on the chair, man?
I wanted to get an overview of the room. I wanted to see what I could see, much like the early explorers to the Americas. I wanted to climb that mountain and survey my property.
Like Christopher Columbus, it came back to bite you in the ass.
Yes.
Maria.
I thought Columbus actually made a lot of money off his trips.
Okay, you're right. I'm talking about whichever ones got murdered a bunch.
Oh, like Captain Cook?
Yeah, there we go.
Captain Crunch.
Oh, yeah, that infamous pair of explorers, Captain Cook and Captain Crunch.
Oh, God. I guess I've unplugged my own headphones. Hold on. Okay. Hey, people from history, I bet you $1 million has been a Captain Crunch at some point in history.
I'm sure there's been a man named Captain Crunch, but you're also betting that he made enough history to be noted in a book.
Okay, but I want to know what kind of ethnicity is the last name Crunch.
It's a white person, 100%.
Like German?
Yeah, I mean, like, that sounds pretty German.
That sounds like the kind of name that when they brought them over onto Ellis Island, they just renamed them to Crunch because they couldn't pronounce their name.
Yeah, that's true. So that's like, that could be...
I'm Captain Crunch. I was my own matey on a ship.
Okay. Anyways, much like the early explorers to the Americas, who at least should have gotten what they deserved, Maria fell off this chair very publicly in the middle of a crowded room. The chair proceeded. It was a folding chair. It's important to know. She stepped on the back part, and the chair proceeded to fold on her. As she fell, as slowly as a person can fall from the chair onto the ground.
This was right next to me, and I watched it, and I couldn't figure out how to catch her. It was like, you're falling very, very slowly.
It's the slowest anyone has ever fallen in the history of falls.
Because you, like, first you double it over, and you kind of were, like, at the table, and then all of a sudden... You were just very slowly toppling onto the ground. And meanwhile, the most alarming thing was that the chair had her foot in like a vise-like grip.
Yes, it did.
Not letting go.
It hurt so bad.
Like, have you ever seen a bear trap? I think that's what it did on your foot.
It was a chair trap.
Yes.
Oh, so the rest of this GP, I've been limping around like a someone with crippling blight. I'm a cripple with crippling blight on me.
So you can't block?
Definitely can't block. If somebody came at me like a football, I would not be able to block, you guys.
Point is, I felt terrible laughing, but if you can just imagine someone slow motion falling. I mean, and it's like a good 4 seconds. You need like a good four count.
It was way more than 4 seconds.
You think?
Yes. I think it took me 15 seconds to fall.
No, it didn't take you 15. That's 10 excessive. Seconds. I think it took you 5. but 5 is a long time. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. Okay, maybe it was like 7. It was like 7 seconds.
Oh, God. Listeners, don't try that at home. Don't stand on a folding chair. You probably learned that a long time ago. Remember that lesson, unlike me.
Now Maria knows it.
Cards of the week and cards of the suck. We're now going to talk about some of our cards that did really well for us at this sealed limited GP. What cards were overperformers and what cards didn't pull their weight, and we're kicking them out of the band. Megan, top performer for you.
I would have to say I have... Oh, just...
Come back to you?
Yeah, come back to me.
All right. actually, I have a sort of surprising card that I liked, which was Dark Steel Citadel. It is land, and it's indestructible. So in my blue-white deck, I had a bunch of people who wanted some artifacts to be hanging around, including Aeronaut Tinkerer. And I was a little wary of Dark Steel because I'm always wary of my mana base not being where I needed to be when I want it to be. But actually, that card was pretty great for turning on my Tinkerers. And I undervalued it, and I'm sorry. I just want to say that publicly.
I just want you to think about the flavor of Aeronaut Tinkerer. It's real cute. It's like he's tinkering around, and if he made something, if there's an artifact hanging around, then he can fly because he was tinkering around and he made it.
That's pretretty cute. I didn't play Ornithopter, though, you guys. I didn't go that deep. Give me a break.
Thank God.
Judge Rob, you got any winners for you today?
I mentioned a couple of them before. Obviously, rares are going to be very, very high performers. I was very favorably impressed, though, with Satyr Wayfinder, especially. He was a very consistent 2-drop. He set up my Undergrowth Scavengers, and he just blocked everything. He's really, really good against Goresko Swiftclaw.
Oh, yeah.
And that creature is a huge problem, and every pool seemed to have 3 of them. And I seem to play the white deck over and over and over.
I also like Zofshade, everybody. That is the 2/2 who for 2 and a black.
3 and a black?
Is it 3 and a black?
Yeah.
It's 3.
Whatever. He can pump. It gets +2/+2. We'll check on that.
His activation is 2 and a black. I was talking about his mana cost.
Oh, correct. Yes, I'm sorry. His activation is 2 and a black, which I think is a steal for +2/+2. I think it'd be 1 more mana. Basically, my opponents were terrified of him. When I swung in, I got in for 2 free damage. If I had another spell to play, I played it. If I didn't, I bumped him. So I really liked him. Megan.
I really liked Research Assistant, which I mentioned before. I always thought like 3 and a blue is a lot to loot. You draw Research Assistant, unlike the Rummaging Goblin, you draw a card and then you discard a card. But holy crap, once you get beyond like turn 5 or 6, it's amazing because all of a sudden, instead of drawing lands, you're drawing other things. But you can you get so deep into your deck.
Was he valuable for you just sitting on the ground blocking, or were you like sometimes against big fat fatties coming at you and there's nothing he could do?
That's true. That sometimes happened, but I did have, my deck was running, like I said, 3 typhoid rats.
Sure.
So really the fat fatties, my deck really did not have a problem dealing with, because we just got some rats out. Also, everyone knows that this card is pretty sweet, but I was just so impressed with it today. It was Zathrid Slyblade. Mm. For 2 and a black, it's a 2/1 hexproof. And for 3 and a black, it gains first strike and death touch and loses hexproof until end of turn. Like, once you have that dude out and you have 4 mana, it's like a brick wall. Yeah. No one wants to attack
Everyone
you.
Everyone is so scared of that card.
Yeah, exactly.
It, for good reasons. There's no way to profitably attack into it unless they have, like, a lightning strike or something.
Yeah. And I played so many green decks that had, like, Hunt the Weak as their only removal spell. So it's like, oh, maybe you can attack and I'll block, and then you can Hunt the Weak. But then you literally just 3-for-1 yourself, but getting rid of my card.
And sometimes you need to do that, though. Like, there were a lot of circumstances where I had to triple block guys in order to just get a bunch of guys dead. Which,
yeah, no, that totally happened. Like, someone did do that to
Question.
Me.
Do you think Hunt the Weak is fine in sealed deck, or do you think it is a little slow?
I think it's slow. Green is unusually one of the control-y colors in this sealed. And so you end up being able to set up circumstances where you have bigger guys and can favorably make a trade. I would very rarely play more than 1 or 2, but, like, 2 seems like a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But the set of circumstances where it just gets to kill a guy and also make your guy bigger and then lets you get an attack in that turn, those games mean that it's just turns the whole game around, where other cards can't even try.
I found that it played against me today several times, and I always was like, yep, that's a thing, there you go. It always worked out for them. So
I don't think it's amazing removal, but as far as removal goes, like, it's decent.
Like, sure.
Yeah. Decent.
I want to make the case that there actually isn't a lot of amazing removal in M15.
I would agree with you on that one.
Like, you have Cone of Flame and, yeah.
Gold standard.
Yeah, gold standard. Best uncommon in the set. I don't think that there's a debate. The only card comparable is Triplicate Spirits. And Triplicate Spirits is almost unstoppably good in some decks.
P.S. Megan had 3 Triplicate Spirits in a sealed deck the other day. 3.
Yeah, that was yesterday. 3 Triplicate Spirits. Holy shit.
Yep.
There's just not a lot of premium removal. The white has a couple of conditional exile removals that cost 3. Black has an unconditional removal that costs 5. Red has Blast Firebolt at 6. Like, there's no murder. There's no Doomblade. There's just everything costs 100 mana to kill a creature. And
there's
so,
no plows, swords to plowshares in my day. We call 1 white mana, we kill something.
I mean, Flesh to Dust is lovely. Covenant of Blood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that card was really solid. There are some times today when it was like, oh, kill your fucking third Master of Predicaments. BT
Somebody
dubs.
Had 3?
No, I was just intimating the number of times that I had to face that card.
Oh, okay.
And then I'll gain back all that damage that you just did to me. So
sure.
It's like it never happened.
Let's talk about cards of the suck. So what cards were you disappointed with, or perhaps you thought they were better than they were going to be, and then they came home with a D minus on their math test, and you're like, I'm not your real mom. You're adopted. Judge Rob.
Over the course of the whole weekend?
Sure.
What has actually... like.
All right, Megan, you think about it.
Yeah, skip to Megan.
I have to say, I would like to tell Bloodhost that I am its adopted mother.
Ah, Bloodhost.
It was just a little slow for my deck. And I feel like it sounds weird, but the place for Bloodhost might not be in a control deck. It might be in some sort of, like, weird black aggro situation. There were no creatures that I had that I wanted to sack. They were all very utility-oriented creatures.
Sure.
It's like, I don't want to sack a Typhoid Rats because that's...
I need that thing.
That's doing some work. Or I don't want to sack a Research Assistant because that's improving my draws. So I feel like in my deck, it wasn't the right place for it. And
another family is what you're saying.
Also, Also, it's the creepiest art.
Super creepy.
Super creepy. So there's that.
Super creepy. My card of the suck was, I mean, I don't want to say card of the suck. Maybe it just wasn't right for my deck. Rob will probably disagree with me. But consistently I found that I didn't really want my amulet of, what was
your
it?
Your avarice amulet.
My avarice amulet when I played it. I think what I rather would have been doing was been trying to still be fast and keep applying pressure. It was stolen by my opponent one time.
Just once, though?
It was only one time.
I mean, that's pretty sick. Which
is shocking.
That's right. Sick.
Well, no, I played it actually twice this weekend, and I have never had it stolen.
Which is so strange to me. But maybe that's the removal issue we were talking about before.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the removal issue, and it's a little bit of... You start getting really paranoid because you just don't want them to have it. And so you just never engage in a situation where they could take it. You put it on a creature that's hard to block. You put it on an intimidator. You put it on a flyer. And you just never get in a fight. You never give them the chance, the opportunity to even think about fighting your guy. And it's lets you get in for two and draw a card every turn, which is, I think it's valuable. Your deck was probably actually too aggressive to need it. I like decks that that are a little more mid-rangier. That's why I like Bloodhost, actually. You two picked out cards that I drafted yesterday and just, they took me to the finals. It was a Bloodhost and an Avarice Amulet because my deck had it was the black aggressive situation.
Rob, we're trying to tell you something.
That I like bad cards. This is manifestly true. They need very reasonably specific decks for them to work in, and I thought that your flyer deck could get some value from the extra power, but apparently it needed a little more.
So
I did find, you and I played a couple of matches against each other. Yeah. I did find that when you like put it on an Aeronaut Tinkerer,
you were scared.
That was no, I just like there's nothing I could fucking do about it.
Oh, yeah.
My underperformer from today was Living Totem. I cited it out every match. In
Why?
Game two. Because it didn't fit in my curve right. I had three Elvish Mystics and two Satyr Wayfinders, and I just never... There was no time where I ever wanted to cast a Living Totem. And I was playing the Bounce My Own Stuff deck. I had a Roaring Primadox and two Infectious... Or whatever. Two of the insects.
Invasive species.
And so I was bouncing my own stuff, and I never even wanted to bounce them because the plus one counter was so marginal for my deck that I just...
Interesting.
Because I didn't want to spend four mana and pick it up. I would rather pick up my Shaman of Spring and draw a card. I'd rather pick up... Heck, I would rather be picking up my Satyr Wayfinders to hit land drops than I would that Living Totem that I just sided out for whatever. It was like, I get to side this out for something because I have some card that's better against you than a Living Totem.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Fascinating.
Listeners, if you have a card that's your card of the week, or perhaps your card of the suck, please tweet it at us at MTAcast. We'd love to have you as a new follower. We're almost at 800 followers. That makes me so excited. And I hope it makes you excited, too, because you've been put in the fold.
You've been brought into the fold. You've been brought
the
there.
Fold.
No, we didn't put you there. We brought you there, and
I
you chose
you
to be in it.
It's warm in here. What?
If you're putting somebody in the fold, it's probably because you're not in the fold.
Semantics. So Judge Rob is doing something interesting with the cards he's opened in the sealed. No, he's not going to burn them or play cut that card in half like we played last episode.
We'll still bring you a vine of that someday soon.
Yeah. He's doing something with all the cards that he opened. Rob, what the heck are you doing with all those cards?
I didn't bring a constructed deck this weekend. Just because I didn't think I was going to play Constructed, and I decided that I've played enough Sealed deck for the weekend, but I still want to play Magic. And so I'm putting together a Standard deck for the Super Sunday Series Standard tomorrow, built out of limited scraps.
That's hilarious.
And it is a pretty hilarious deck. So in Soul Artifact, Enchanted Artifact is a 5/5. You can put it on Darksteel Citadel and get an indestructible 5/5.
Sweet.
And if you are playing correctly, you can do it on turn three and attack with a 5/5 the same turn, which is pretty great. So I'm putting together, stringing together a bunch of commons and uncommons, and I'm playing Shrapnel Blasts and Ensoul Artifact and Ornithopter so that I can...
Question. How many matches are you not going to lose?
How many matches am I not going to lose? I, so, so I'm hoping to play to a positive record tomorrow.
Okay.
Like, I'm hoping to get in there, and I'm hoping to make some people very unhappy with me, because they're going to be like, you're playing a bunch of, you know, M15 commons and uncommons. Your deck has a total of, like, two rares total, and they're Shivan Reefs.
Right. So tell me about some of these, what you're trying to do. What's your plan is it just in soul?
In soul artifact, Shrapnel Blast, sacrifice an artifact, 5 damage to target creature or player. And then playing a bunch of other aggressive creatures like a Borderland Marauder and Illusory Angel. And then just trying to overload them very quickly. And deal them 10 damage and then double Shrapnel Blast them out.
Sweet.
Or use Generator Servant to make a hasty Illusory Angel and a hasty Borderland Ranger on turn 3. Because if you open a Generator Servant on 2, you can cast both of them on 3 and then attack them for 7 damage. And that seems pretty fine.
Well, for your sake, I hope that you make some people real pissed off. So I think it'll be hilarious because they've like worked super hard on their standard deck, and you're like, ha, 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 I built this last night, suckers.
The cost of this deck is going to be actually $0 because it's just random reject limited cards from other people's decks.
The two plays, maybe you already talked about these, the two plays that I am the most excited about you potentially making tomorrow are turn 3 Ornithopter for 0 and Illusory Angel.
Yes, that's on my list.
Or a turn 2 Generator Servant into turn 3 Borderland Marauder with haste and and Illusory Angel with haste.
Yes, that's one that I was excited for and I just talked about because that sevens them. And then what do you do? Like,
ugh.
Yeah.
I really am excited. You're going to have to, we're going to have to update the listeners on how this crazy deck does.
Yes.
We really are. I think
It's going to be pretty good.
We're going to follow up tomorrow night with some, well, depending on when you two fly out, depending on how I'm doing at that point.
Follow us on Twitter. We'll tweet it out. We'll also perhaps put some results for you on magicdeamaturing.com underneath in this in the show notes where this episode is posted.
Yeah, maybe I can snag a photo of this deck tomorrow and we can.
Perfect.
We can show everybody what madness looks like.
If you ever stared into the face of insanity. Create a card. Into the Fold. So we've been talking about Into the Fold a lot on this episode. Megan, you've created a card called Into the Fold?
I have. This card is 2 and a white, because obviously, sheep. It's 2 and a white, and it's an enchantment. And it says, if during your upkeep, if an opponent cast a creature spell last turn, put a 1/1 white sheep token onto the battlefield under your control.
Oh, maybe this will look good in Yvonne Phlox's deck.
Oh, Phlox pun. Anyways.
So I, however, have created a card called Put Into the Fold.
That's not a card. It's not legal. We're banning it from We're banning it from our set.
And it is 3 blue-blue. It is an enchantment. It gives every card that you have morph.
What?
Because they're coming into the fold. They're getting into the morph gang. They're coming into the morph gang, the crew.
So every single card in your hand has morph?
Yeah, if it's a creature card.
Oh, every creature.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And what is its morph cost?
Morph is the same cost for everything.
But I mean, what's its cost to flip it over?
Oh, I should probably put that on the card. 3.
What? No.
I just picked a number. My ankle hurts. Feel bad for me. I fell off a chair.
It was hilarious. It should be, I think it's just like its casting cost.
Okay.
Is it morph cost?
Sure.
Or maybe it's casting cost minus 1 colorless.
I think that would be a kind of a cool card, actually. I think it would suck, but I think they should make it.
Or it might be bonkers.
We actually have never played with morph, Megan and I. We're going to have our first opportunity with Khans of Tarkir, because that set does include morph.
Yeah. Morph, do you want to talk about morph, or do you want me to have my bring into the fold?
Let's
talk about morph real quick.
Oh, okay.
We'll do it.
Okay.
Card be good?
My bring into the fold? I think it's actually pretty good.
How about this one that I made?
The one that you made?
Yeah.
It has some actual rules issues.
any good card I make shall have.
So the big trick with the morph ability, Morph on a card, it says morph in a mana cost, gives you two things. It lets you play it face down, and then that gives you a morph cost to turn it face up. The card is actually always the card, even when it's face down. But the characteristics of being a 2-2 creature with no abilities overwrites its characteristics while it's face down.
So it costs three to put it face down, right?
Yeah, three to cast it. And so the big trick is you would have to actually say creatures you control have on the battlefield have morph. You couldn't say that they have a morph cost of their mana cost because you have to look at their characteristics as they're on the battlefield to figure out their mana cost. Their mana cost is null. And so you could never actually turn them face up.
Weird.
You would have to do a static number of some variety, and I don't think there is a number that is fair. Like, I think that being able to play Emrakul face down for three and the next turn him face up for some number is
never going to not be broken.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
Okay.
They call that card Show and Tell, and it's played in Legacy.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
So, like, it just from a rules standpoint, it doesn't work very well. I think it's funny to give all your stuff morph, and since you could play it face down and do that.
Putting them into the fold.
Morph is the ultimate hidden information mechanic. The only thing that I really want to warn people about, and I'm going to warn again when we talk about morph when cons comes close, is if you're playing in a competitive tournament and you play a morph card and it gets bounced to your hand and you don't reveal it, or the game ends and you don't reveal it, and you like shuffle it into your library, that ends up getting you a game loss.
So even if they bounce it, you've got to show it. So they've got more information than they would normally have.
A little bit.
Before the end of the game you have to show it? Or when they bounce it, you have to flip it over and be like, this is it?
Anytime it leaves the battlefield while it's face down, anytime it goes to any other zone, you have to reveal it to demonstrate that this particular card had morph. Because let's say that I could play a planes face down and then attack with it a couple times and then peel from reality my own planes and your guy, pick my planes back up, and then play it as
and
a planes.
You've just been a cheater pants.
Yes, exactly.
We actually talked about this on an episode of Magic the Amateuring back in the day when we were confused. We didn't know. We had to consult. We were like, wait a second, you could totally cheat. And how would anybody know?
Nope, but you have to turn them over.
Yep.
Thank you for that helpful bit of
welcome.
Information. What is your Into the Fold?
So Into the Fold, blue, white, and two enchantment.
All made enchantments. Hold up. We all made enchantments. Weird.
Yeah, of course we did.
Okay.
Tap an untapped creature you control. Target creature becomes a 0/1 sheep with no abilities until end of turn. Tap two untapped sheep you control. Draw a card for each sheep on the battlefield.
Oh.
That card sounds pretty sweet.
I like that card.
That's a pretty sick card.
That'd be pretty good.
I like how both of you had sheep-themed cards, and mine had absolutely nothing to do with anything.
And that sums you up. In closing, what do you think is the most important thing you've learned this weekend?
I think the most important thing I've learned is to take myself seriously when I play and to not let my opponents intimidate me, which you think, you should already learn that, Maria. But it's like I relearn it every time I go to a very competitive event.
I gave you a little scolding today.
Megan did, because I wasn't so jazzed about my deck. And she said, no, play your deck like you can win. And you're right. You should always do that. And you should act like you can win when you sit down, too. Because I sat down from some intimidating people sometimes today. And you know, the times when I felt best is when I felt like I held my own. And I played to the top of my abilities, even though we were playing really fast or they were looking crabby or whatever. And I just said, you know what? I'm not going to let it get to me because I am just as much a Magic player as that person.
That's right. The flip side of that is when you sit down across from somebody, don't be a dick.
Right.
Man, you guys, two different people today. There are two. I mean, out of seven, which is a lot.
Yeah.
But two roll dicks.
Was that your opponents or was that all of the... all the opponents for everybody.
I felt like it was a theme with a team. It was a team theme. It could be a team theme of dickishness. Like if one person was kind of a dick.
Well, dicks like to stick together, you know.
Yeah.
What do you say?
You know what they say? Dicks like to stick together.
Oh my god.
You're right, I always forget that saying. But like they say, dicks like to stick together.
Kind of profound saying that you could only get from your mother.
Robert, you have a lesson from this weekend?
My lesson from this weekend is Something that was mentioned in the panel that I went to on Friday with the pros is we win as a team or lose as a team. When you're sitting down and playing Magic with your friends as a team, which is my favorite thing to do, don't get hung up on your record. Get hung up on the team's record. And, like, don't get down if, like, you lose a key game or somebody else loses a key game or whatever. The team won or lost that key game. And the only way to make sure that you keep playing well and you keep having fun, which is the important part, is that you have solidarity as a team as opposed to just being, you know, on your own and happen to be playing at the same places to other people.
No man is an island unless you are exclusively Blue Mage.
Or unless you have a Nissa and you've used its ability on an island and you've made a 4/4 creature.
I get it.
Then it's a manland. Unless you're Mutavault. No, you're not an island if you're a Mutavault. Shut up, Megan.
What if... Sure.
That's a different saying from no man is on an island. There's a man on an island somewhere. The biggest lesson I learned was to take my time. Because especially if I've been playing quite a bit over a couple of days, I can really start to rush myself or rush my decision making. And
are you seeing a pin? Okay.
And that always is a bad idea. You know, you make bad plays, you make bad decisions, you don't take the time that you should. So really just, you know, chill it the fuck out, man.
I find that having a cup of tea mid-round is a great way to remember
Piss
to take
off
your time.
Your opponent? Okay, never mind.
Oh, right.
Well, you guys, it's been a great weekend here at the GP.
It sure has. It's been 73 and sunny all weekend.
Not like we would know.
Nope. Everyone, thank you so much if you came up and said hello. We had a great time. There are a lot of really nice people here, including one guy dressed as a squid who I took a picture with. Check it out on Twitter at MTAcast if you want to see that.
Yeah, you can send us an email at magictheamateuring@gmail.com or check out our website, magictheamateuring.com.
We're available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio as well as mtgcast.com and themetery.org.
We want to give a big shout out to Judge Rob for coming, one, being on our team.
Yeah,
that was super
thank
sweet.
You, Judge Rob.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You made all sorts of scary moments not scary because you know what the heck you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, Team Sealed is my favorite live tournament format right now. I love coming out and playing with teams. I've played in actually every U.S. Team Sealed tournament since 2006.
Wow.
It sounds more impressive than it actually is because I've only played in 4 Team Sealed tournaments. Because they had one in 2006 and then stopped for a long time.
And Nashville is going to be Team Sealed.
Yep. Nashville is also Team Sealed.
Coming up, do you know when that is?
That's the last weekend in October.
Okay. So if you're a listener and you think this sounds really fun, hey, head over to Nashville, see some country singers, play some Magic, probably eat some crawdad on the Barbie.
Nope.
Are you Australian?
It's just so you know, Nashville, the intersection between Louisiana and Australia. If you needed to know where it was.
Well, listeners, join us again next week for some more shenanigans. Signing off from Portland's Convention Center, I'm Maria.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Rob.
Judge Rob.
Your name is Judge Rob. Your name is Judge Rob. I manage your birth certificate. It's Judge Rob.
Good night.
3P Portland, you're so great. GP Portland, I do not hate you. GP Portland, I'd rather date you. GP Portland, then we could mate.